has a sliding scale when it comes to jail time. Some people can expect a great deal more retribution than others. And as for Josh Mullen, well, good luck, Josh. You'll soon be back in your police uniform. And you wonder, another sign that the nation's infrastructure is showing some serious infrastructure. Wenapum Dam on the Columbia River is just one example. It's showing a little crackage these days. And this is just one of many aging public projects that are feeling the effects of time. The consequent reduction of water levels at the dam have prompted crews to carry out about $7 million worth of work on fish ladders for Chinook salmon. Now, let's remember, let's think carefully about this. Fish ladders are not part of Chinook salmon habitat. We have destroyed Chinook salmon habitat. When you destroy the habitat of a creature, the creature is dead. They're zombies. It's the walking dead. And unless the habitat is restored, which in some cases is difficult, if not impossible to accomplish, that species is in fact extinct. A few still may be swimming, a few still may be scrambling up the ladders, but nonetheless, it's extinct. Let's just get over ourselves and use that word. The salmon are extinct. We've destroyed their habitat. So all the ladders and putting fish on trucks and driving them all over the country, none of that is going to save anything except our own fragile self-esteem as a culture, as a society. However, returning to Wenapum Dam, the consequent reduction of water levels have prompted crews to carry out all of this work on the ladders. Existing fish ladders at the Rock Island and Wenapum Dams are being extended to allow the Chinook to reach their spawning grounds. Extended for what? How many salmon are actually going to bother with this? Keith Truscott, Director of Natural Resources for the Clelland Public Utility District, sounding very much like a tribal member on the issue of perhaps a fish-hugging hippie, says the fish, this is his quote, this guy sounds like a stand-up guy. The fish coming up are a way of life for the Pacific Northwest. A lot of effort has been put into recovering and increasing the fish runs to the Upper Columbia. We shouldn't allow an unplanned incident like this to deter us from our goal to be good stewards of the environment. Well spoken, Jessica. He's right, of course. And returning to the subject of Edward Snowden, possibly will our self-exiled, hidden in Russia hero, the right wing conservatives' latest bugaboo, Edward Snowden, another current. Will Edward Snowden win the coveted Golden Key, the Pulitzer Prize for journalism? Yep, could happen, and well deserved too. Fortunately, most Americans are blissfully ignorant of both the man and the minutiae of this particular case coming up. So jury selection probably won't be, this is not on Edward Snowden. We're moving through the dense thickets of American jurisprudence, what such as it is. In this case, a jury selection probably won't be taxpayers' bumbreaker. Still, Oregonians might find a few dead leaves at the bottom of the memory pool. Jury selection is to begin in the trial of a disabled Egyptian Islamic preacher. He was extradited from Great Britain on charges that he conspired to support Al-Qaeda, in part by trying to create, wait for it, and this is why it should ring a bell, a training camp in Oregon 15 years ago. Where's Lynn Stewart right now when we need her the most? This country is in serious need of lawyers who have the courage to stand up for their conviction. No pun intended there. But we are in a dire We're in dire straits. There are very few who are willing to consider the fact that their freedom could very well be on the line, not just the freedom of their client. We saw in the case of Lynn Stewart, and very few followed Lynn Stewart's footsteps. There are a few out there. But as times become even more dangerous for the resistance, such as it is in this country, we see fewer and fewer stepping forward. We also, as we pointed out and considered last week, it's becoming increasingly dangerous to stand up for one's convictions when it comes to environmental action. Jeffrey Lewis is now landscaping a median strip somewhere outside Eugene and claiming that he deeply regrets his actions those years ago. And I'm good. Maybe he ought to, but let's not forget that no one died. And the only thing that that suffered, of course, was the bottom line of the car dealerships. And Jeffrey now is more than willing to speak about his youthful folly and indiscretion. Edward Abbey never talked about his youthful folly and indiscretions. He talked about taking action in the only down avenues that were the only ways left for him after having exhausted all possible routes, legal, through the media, every possible way extinguished, leaving one the chancy and extremely dangerous and growing more dangerous by the year steps that Lewis took those years ago. No one's taking those steps anymore. People have learned exactly what's in store for them if they do go down those roads. In the case of the disabled Egyptian Islamic preacher, Mustafa Kamal Mustafa, he was extradited from Great Britain on charges that he conspired to support Al-Qaeda by trying to create a training camp in Oregon 15 years ago. Now, Iran's nuclear chief has raised concerns of the fate of his country's only atomic power plant amid talks with the West about a final deal to curb the Iranian nuclear crisis. Ali Akbar Salehi says that the country needs 30,000 more centrifuges to enrich uranium and produce enough nuclear fuel to run the Bashir power plant for one year. The plant was made, and here's why this is such a boil and blister for the West. These plants were built with Russian aid. They've been online since 2011. That complicates the matter immeasurably. And finally, the UN Security Council met late last night in emergency session as violence is taking off in eastern Ukraine. This is just before this morning's deadline for the pro-Russia protesters to lay down their arms or face Ukrainian troops. Well, all of this could have been avoided had NATO not been pushing farther and farther east, and without negotiations with Russia, and without any regard for the historical implications of those moves. Let's not forget too there's an extraordinary white supremacist shooting in Kansas, and more on that probably coming in tomorrow. This has been Cascadia for Monday, April 14th, 2014. And don't forget, there is a total lunar eclipse this evening. Our engineer today is Joe Clement. Thanks so much for that, Joe. Kathleen Stevenson is, of course, the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Tune in to Talking Earth, a show dedicated to showcasing our local poetry scene. Join hosts Patrick Picard, Barbara Lamorticella, and Walt Curtis for Talking Earth, on the second and third Mondays of each month from 10 to 11 p.m. More information can be found on kboo.fm under schedule.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland. The time is 10:17, and up next is Locus Focus. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Artemis Foods, Portland's local organic and sustainable catering company since 2001. Special events, corporate and wedding catering with seasonal menus and service supported by sustainable business operations. Artemis offers full service and drop-off catering. Information at artemisfoods.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Primitive open fire cooking methods used by people in remote regions of the High Himalayas are responsible for significant deforestation, toxic air pollution, global warming, and millions of premature deaths. One solution to this problem is providing clean-burning stoves to impoverished Himalayan households. Not only do these cook stoves reduce carbon emissions and help stave off pollution and deforestation, but they also improve the health and living conditions of women and children. This morning we talked with George Bosch, founder of the Himalayan Stove Project, whose mission is changing the world one clean stove at a time. George, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thank you very much, Barbara. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, I want to start with your mission. How do you see that you are going to be changing the world one stove at a time? It seems like a very slow way to go.
Well, there are lots of other people working on the problem. The United Nations and the World Health Organization and other organizations have founded the Global Clean Stove Initiative, and they are trying to get 100 million stoves in place worldwide by 2020. We have just selected a very small part of that problem in the Himalayas for several reasons. One, it's an area that I'm familiar with. I've trekked and climbed there. Secondly, we know the local people, and we have good connections with many of the NGOs that are working there. And so we've selected that. The demand, the need in the Himalayas, in the Nepal Himalayas, is over 1 million stoves. And we're doing this as a philanthropic activity, and so we depended on the general public and institutions and foundations for our funding, and we bring the stoves over there, 1,500 at a time in a container, and distribute them to the families.
Well, let's start by talking a little bit more about what this problem is, because when we think about all the contributing factors to climate change, we're usually thinking about not small cook stoves in the Himalayas, but like large coal-fired plants in China and the United States and other industrialized countries. So why are you so concerned about the problems that are being caused by cook stoves?
Well, the World Health Organization issued an updated report a few days ago that said that 7 million deaths a year, which is one out of every eight deaths on the planet, is caused by pollution of various types. But 4.3 million deaths are attributable to household air pollution, which is generated by inefficient cook stoves. So it's a gigantic number. People are unaware of it pretty well. It's hopefully getting a little more publicity. But particularly in regions like the Himalayas, where there are relatively few options to wood or dung burning stoves, other than in the cities where they can use gas or electricity, they're using primitive or traditional fuels in primitive stoves. And when you walk into one of the homes, it's almost unbearable. And by providing them with an efficient stove, we cut the indoor air pollution by somewhere between 80 and 90%, which creates a more healthy environment for the family and reduces the deforestation because so much less wood is being used.
Well, let's talk about what are the stoves like that you're trying to replace? Are they just like open fires in the houses, or are they vented in any way?
Most of them, many of them, are open fires. I mean, there's literally campfires in the middle of the room. Some of them are constructed stoves. They're vented or partially vented, but many of them are actually hand-built in the home, so the venting varies, and some of it's very primitive.
Well, how? Because you mentioned in your publicity that this is also a contributor to climate change. It's very obvious that it's a major health and pollution concern inside the houses. But how does this kind of fuel for cooking also contribute to climate change?
Well, one of the big contributors to climate change is black carbon. The World Bank issued a report in November where they identified two major sources of black carbon. One is from automobile, in particular diesel exhaust, and the second is from primitive cocoas, because 3 billion people around the world, which is 40-some percent of the global population, cook on primitive cook stoves. So it's a major contributor, and it's particularly evident in the Himalayas, because as the black carbon gets into the atmosphere and then gets deposited on the glacier, if you remember your high school physics, heat is attracted by and transmitted through a black body. So if the glacier is pure white snow, it's going to reflect a lot of the heat and the solar energy. But if it gets coated even partially with black carbon, it's going to absorb that heat, and it's going to speed up the melt of the glaciers.
Well, this makes me think about some of the issues we had actually here in Oregon a number of years ago, when there was a